this is some work I have finished in the past, but I think it's still interesting and useful. Actually, quite useful. So this is about electroweak constraints using effective theory approach. So this is the outline of my talk. So first, very briefly, review why we need TEV scale new physics beyond the standard model. Then why we can get constraints from electroweak precision measurements. And then I will present my work using effective theory approach to analyze electroweak data. Then I'll apply this result to some TEV scale models. After that, I'll conclude. So this is a very well-known problem of the standard model, namely the hierarchy problem, namely that the Planck scale and the electroweak symmetric breaking scale is separated by a large gap. So people want to understand that. So we believe that there should be some new physics that below the standard Planck scale. So we want to ask then the natural question is at what scale this new physics kicks in. We can estimate the fine-tuning to the Higgs mass if we require that there's no fine-tuning to the Higgs mass, then we can actually pin down this this scale. For example, this is from the top loop, one loop correction to the Higgs mass. If we require that this contribution, this correction to the Higgs mass is not fine-tuned, is fine-tuning is less than 10%, then we kind of know that the new physics scale is like at the TEV scale. So we believe that the TEV scale should be TEV should be the cutoff of the standard model. So there are already a lot of TEV scale models, like SUSE, Technicolor, extra dimensions, or little Higgs models. So this all these new physics predict new particles, new heavy states at TEV scale. So we can hope that at LHC or even Tevatron, we can find these particles so that we know there are new physics beyond the standard model. But on the other hand, we can also find the traces from these new physics by looking at lower scale measurements. These new heavy states actually they contribute at the quantum quantum level to the this lower scale experiments. These experiments are just those electroweak precision tests. As beginning, they are performed to actually test the standard model. They actually have established the standard model as the correct electroweak physics. They are all measured to good precision. They are like a 1% level or even better. They include a lot of a list of observables, like atomic parity violation experiments. This is from lower scale to higher scale. Then this list goes to we can look at deep inelastic scattering for neutrino nucleon scattering. Then this is a scale goes higher. We can look at the Zippo the electron pair to fermion pair production, and beyond that we can look at the beyond the Zippo energy scale we can look at W pair production and so on. So why is this there's no new physics new particles produced in these experiments, but why is that we can constrain new physics using we can probe new physics using these experiments? This is just a very simple example. You look at the electron pair production, electron pair to fermion pair scattering process, then the standard model contribution is just the photon and the exchange. But if we have a heavier gauge boson Z prime that behaves like a Z, it can also mediate this process, so that when we have this gauge boson, new gauge boson, we need to add this amplitude to the standard model contribution. So we look, when we look at this scattering, the cross section, we can, if actually it deviates from the standard model, then we can see that there are new physics. But indeed, when we look at this process, the experiments, actually we didn't see significant deviations from the standard model, which means that we can get constraints on these masses, the mass or the couplings for this Z prime boson. There are a lot of these experiments, so naturally, when we consider a TV scale model, we want to include all these relevant experiments. And so what we want is a model independent method, so that we don't need to calculate from time to time the new physics contributions to all these experiments. Actually, for example, there are a list of observables here. We can see that there are quite many measurements here, so we don't want to repeat this calculation for every model. The idea is we use some model independent method. We, for example, we can take several parameters that is model independent. We can calculate the new contributions from these parameters to the experimental data, then we can get a model-independent constraints on these model-independent parameters. For example, these famous oblique parameters, ST and U parameters, they are just kind of model-independent. But however, this is very useful. For example, they actually killed, people use this to kill many simple version of Technicolor theories. But in practice, there are a lot of theories that actually the contribution to these experiments cannot be fully described by these several oblique parameters. For example, just the Z prime cannot, the contribution from Z prime cannot be all included in S, T, and U parameters. So the consequence is that in the literature, there are a lot of calculations, model-dependent calculations. People did that from time to time. Actually, this is a waste of time, I think. So the solution to this, this is actually also pretty simple. If we look at the, we consider the effective theory approach, below the cutoff of our new physics, we know that here I assume that all the new particles are all pretty heavy, like 1 TeV also. So that below 1 TeV, for example, we can integrate out these heavy particles. So we can get the standard model Lagrangian plus some a bunch of high order operators. So we can forget about all those heavy particles now, and all their contributions to the lower scale physics experiments are just can be described by a bunch of operators. In these operators, only the standard model appear, the standard model fields appear. So this operators, they respect the standard model symmetry, so to a given order, the number of effective operators are limited. So that means we can concentrate on these all these operators instead of infinite number of models.
So here, this is just a very natural model-independent analysis. I want to just use this approach to do the analysis. This is the general procedure. So I just first identify a set of operators that is relevant to the analysis, to the experiments. We add them to the standard model Lagrangian. But we assume a general coefficients for operator O here. We can calculate the deviations from to the observables from these operators, assuming arbitrary coefficients AI. Now we can calculate, we can compare with the data, and we can get constraints on these AIs. So then for a given model, the only thing that one still needs to do is just to translate these constraints on this AI to the constraints on model parameters, like the masses, the couplings in your model. Okay, so there are a lot of operators. Now I want to reduce the number, and let's look at those operators that are relevant to the experiments and the new physics. So I'll only focus on dimension 6 operators, since actually this is quite enough for lambda, the cutoff to be 1 TeV scale. I'll keep only, of course, independent operators. For example, operators can be related by equations of motion, so I don't need to consider I don't need to consider dependent operators. Also, I want to keep operators that are relevant to TeV scale, which means that some operators are just constrained very tightly. The cutoff for these operators are much higher than TeV scale. For example, the CP violation or Baryon number violation. So they are not likely to be relevant to TeV scale physics. So I call this operators over-constrained. I don't want to consider this kind of operators. And also, I don't want to consider this operators that are poorly constrained. These operators are just not tightly constrained by experiments, so we don't need to consider those. The method to remove those over-constrained operators is by imposing some symmetries. This, for example, the baryon and the lepton number conservation and the CP invariance. And also, I want to impose a flavor symmetry. Here, I will see a few more words about this. So I don't like the flavor changing neural currents. So I don't want the operators like this to be present at our TeV scale. This is actually constrained by experiments to have this lambda to be very large. So I will impose a symmetry to actually forbid this operator. But now the question is, what kind of symmetry? So we can use, for example, U1 symmetry for each flavor. We can add this operator, this three operators to our Lagrangian. These several operators have different coefficients, but the question is in what basis? Of course, if they are all flavor, if flavor basis, then there's no problem, but in principle or in practice, a lot of model actually doesn't give you that flavor basis. So we need to worry about these kind of things. One simpler solution is just we assume that all these coefficients are the same. So that means we just impose a larger symmetry, flavor symmetry, a U3 symmetry instead of three U1 symmetries. So if we impose this flavor in a vasality, there's no problem of changing bases, and they are always the same in different bases. So I will choose U3 to the fifth symmetry to be our flavor symmetry. Actually, this is a symmetry in the standard model if the fermion, if the Yukawa coupling are ignored. So I will, sometimes this is too large a symmetry. For example, for the leptons, there's no reason that we use U3 symmetry instead of three different U1s, because there's no flavor, I mean, there's no mixing in the lepton sector, like in the Yukawa, like in the quark sector. So, but this is just a simplification. Actually, this works for a lot of models, so this I will just assume this symmetry from now. When I impose this symmetry, I can omit all those flavor indices. So I will use Q, L, U, D, E to represent our fermions. Q and L are the left-handed doublets, and U, D, E are the actually right-handed singlet fields. Later, I'll talk about some relaxation for this flavor symmetry, which means that I can reduce the symmetry to U2 cross U1 to the fifth. This is later. I will talk about this later. So, okay, I have removed all those operators that are over-constrained. I also want to remove the poorly constrained operators, for example, these are even not constrained. For example, this operator, it just involves the Higgs bosons. No current experiments can give you anything information about this. And I also want to remove operators like these. These, for example, maybe affect the 2JS production at hadron colliders, but the precision for those processes are very low, so I can ignore these kind of operators. After all these simplification, I get 21 operators that are relevant to my analysis. So these are the 21 operators. So first, we have two operators that modify Gauge boson propagators. Actually, these two operators this just corresponds to the famous S and T parameters. And we have like 11 for fermion operators. They all include two leptons because these are actually measured in the experiments. Two leptons go to quarks or to other leptons. There are operators that modify the gauge fermion couplings. They involve two Higgs doublets and two fermions. So if you give the Higgs a vacuum, then from this covariance derivative, you get a gauge boson. Then you just change the gauge boson coupling to fermions. And the last operator is a triple gauge coupling operator. It affects actually the W pair production at a lab. So now I just add all these 21 operators to our model Lagrangian. Then we can calculate from this Lagrangian the predictions to the new all these experiments. Since that this this suppression, if lambda is 1 TeV scale, is a pretty small suppression. So we only need to actually keep the tree level, the linear contribution to the experiments in terms of AI. So that means we only need to consider the interference between the standard model and the new physics contribution. So for a given experiments, given observable, we can write this observable as the standard model prediction plus a linear contribution from our operators. It's a function of AI times this dot xi. This actually is what we want to calculate. These are just the contribution from the new, from a given new operator to this given observable x. Since that I assume that I work to linear order, so this is only linear in AI. Okay, this again the observables included in my analysis. So first, these are three most precisely measured observables. I'll take them as the input parameters to give us the standard model gauge coupling and the Higgs vacuum expectation value. This is a list of the observables in my analysis. You might wonder that actually where's G minus 2 in the list? Actually, G minus 2, the anomalous magnetic momentum is it's not included in the in this analysis. This actually has very high precision. So the reason we don't include this is, first, there's a tree level contribution operator that can contribute to this observable at tree level. This is, looks like this. But of course, this is very precisely measured. So this one, if we consider this one, this lambda square must be very large. And also, this actually violate the flavor symmetry I have assumed, because it involves a left-handed lepton and a right-handed lepton, which violates the U3 flavor symmetry. I actually assumed the two different U3 for the left-handed fermions and the right-handed leptons. So actually, the other operators that is included in my analysis, they contribute at loop level to this observable, but from this observable, it doesn't give these operators more constraints, tighter constraints than those other measurements, because actually these operators contribute to these other measurements at tree level instead of loop level. So although this G minus 2 is very precisely measured, but it doesn't necessarily give us the tighter constraints.
So what's the lambda for the electron that you would get?
This one?
Just, yeah.
This actually, it depends on, I mean, what is involved in these coefficients. When you consider, for example, a TeV scale gauge boson contribution to G minus 2, then there's a suppression ME squared over your TeV. So if you include that to your coefficients and also have the loop factor, then times this, then this could be TeV scale. That is why this G minus 2 actually is relevant to TeV scale physics. But we have to include all those loop level, loop corrections, so it's kind of not very, not similar to all other operators.
this make our analysis more complicated. That is why we don't include the G-2.
So
actually the work, the main work is just calculate the delta x, the contribution from the operators to all those observables. But they are actually quite simple calculations. It's only tree-level calculations. But although the number is large, the number of operators and experiments are large, but they are all very simple. Just take some time to do that. So I just here I just ignore all those calculations, but just to present the results. So it's not very useful to just give constraints for all for each individual operators, the 21 operators, because these corrections are correlated from these operators. So when we compare the experiments and the so here's the result written this way: the chi-square of the in terms of the operator coefficients is calculated this way. We compare the experiments experiment data and the theoretical predictions from our Lagrangian. We can divide this in square this and divide by the experimental errors. Then, because this this predictions is linear in AI, so this chi square is actually quadratic in this coefficients AIs. So we can write this chi square as this form: this standard model chi square plus a linear term, then plus a quadratic term. So the result is actually the numerical result is this vector VI and this matrix MIG. So I want to keep this MIG. Actually, the diagonal part of this MI actually they give us the constraints for each individual operator, but since that these corrections are correlated, I need to keep actually all these matrix. All these off-diagonal elements are also important. So here is actually the numerical results. I don't want you to look at all those numbers. It's very small. This is a 21 by 21 matrix. It's a symmetric. And this is the vector. What I want to emphasize is that although this is quite large matrix, but actually it contains all the information from the experiments. If given these numbers, well, actually I put this to just a mathematical file. Whenever you want to constrain a model, you just need these numbers. You don't need to do the calculations once again for your models.
Could you go back one transparency for a moment? I just lost track of something.
Sure. This one?
Yes, right. So why are the AIs the AIs are your model predictions, right?
The AI are the coefficients for...
Right, and so they'd be predicted in some model, right?
Right.
So why do you say that it's only the MII that constrains a single operator? Because I haven't quite understood that yet.
When you cite AI, for example, A1 to be non-zero and all other AIs, because one AI corresponds to one
operator. You set all others to zero, then you get A1M1.
The linear term somehow?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So
the linear term also contribute. Sure.
So I mean, wouldn't you have to use some combination of the VI hat?
Yeah, you just
use,
for example, V1 and M11.
All right. Okay. So that was too simple a statement then.
Right.
I have another simple question. Is it consistent to keep terms to quadratic order here when in the calculation?
Well, I was just thinking about that. I think the next order is if you had an A squared term in X theoretical, I think that would.
Yeah, because
the
quadratic term actually comes from
this
square here. Yeah, if you keep the. If X theoretically is AI plus AI squared, then you get a triplet, a cube term, I think. Which is smaller than this.
I think the question is the A squared term from the X theory minus, if there is already a big difference between the standard model value and the X experimental value, I could take out A squared
there. There's no large, in general deviations from the standard model. This is why
one to 2.5 sigma.
Yeah.
So for that one, you might have to keep our order.
One sigma, I don't think one sigma will be.
Forward backward V symmetry is 2.5 sigma or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, never mind. Just plug in some numbers later and see if it happens.
Okay.
So I claim that these numbers are very useful, very powerful. So this is an example. So I said that the first two operators actually correspond to SNT parameters. So let's just do SNT fit. So I'll just take the first 2x2 matrix of our matrix M and first two component of the VI. Then I can get this chi-square in terms of as a function of SNT. Then I can do a fit, actually, because it's just a quadratic function of SNT, so the allowed region for SNT are just an ellipse on the plane. I can compare this with PDG.
Is that before putting in some assumed Higgs mass?
Yeah, this is for light Higgs mass. Yeah, best fit Higgs mass.
The preceding one. This is before you've made any Higgs, put in any Higgs at all, or?
This is for a given Higgs, 115, I think.
Oh, okay.
Also.
All right. Okay,
you have to know the standard model prediction to get it this far.
Right, that's what I'm trying to get.
Yeah.
Straight. Okay, so your center on this one is somewhat negative SNT. I can't remember the current. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So, this is a prediction from the PDG's review of particle physics. So, this red region corresponds to light Higgs 117. This black ellipse is just what I showed you. The previous figure. So we can see that the agreement is very well. And
this other region just corresponds to heavier Higgs. So, I want to briefly talk about this relaxed symmetry case. So, we know that TV scale flavors physics involving the third generation are still allowed. So, I want to treat the third generation differently. So, I'll relax this U3 flavor symmetry to U2 plus U1. For example, I can consider this kind of operator. This B and B bar is the third generation. So for here, actually, I don't consider those flavor changing experiments. So for here, I don't need to be very careful about the basis for the third generation, because if only there's a small rotation from the flavor base, for example, from the Yukawa coupling, it just changed a little bit. It's a higher order fraction to, for example, E plus minus to BB bar process. So I can just ignore this difference between different bases, because I just do not add those flavor changing experiments. I just add as is operators and still use the previous experiments. They're just more operators, but there's no new, in principle, there's no new things actually. So I just add these operators, still sum over, still the, this is a previous operators, they are still present here, but the sum for these fermions are assumed to this understood to be sum over the first two generations, and I add these third generation fermions also written in this way, so I can add more four fermion operators and more operators that modify gauge fermion couplings, but the method is the same. Okay, now I want to give some applications to this using this result. So for a given model, we first integrate out these heavy particles. Well, I have assumed that all new particles are heavy. That means this is not very good for a model like Su-Cevey's R parity, which involves very light new particles. So those particles don't decouple from the standard model at low scale. So that is not very. This method is not useful for those models. But in many other models, it actually is useful. So I can obtain those operator coefficients AI as functions of the parameters in the model. Now I just substitute this AI to the chi-square, then we can get constraints to the model. For example, let's talk about late Higgs models. I don't want to go to the detail of late Higgs models, but we just need to remember that there are heavy fermions, gauge bosons, and scalars at the TF scale. We want to integrate out these particles. Here's an example. This is a SU6 SP6 Higgs model. In this model, the standard model gauge group is enlarged to two copies of SU2 and two copies of U1. They are broken to the standard model gauge group. So naturally, there are heavy gauge bosons from the larger gauge group. They are all of TV scale. and there are couplings, there are pairs of SU2 couplings and a pair of U1 gauge coupling. So the standard mode hypercharge is just the sum of the two U1 charge of these two gauge groups. So here is how we can get these operators. It's just an exchange, gauge boson exchange between a fermion pair or a Higgs pair and a fermion pair, which give us these Higgs, this Higgs F operator, which modify that gauge fermion coupling, and we can also get a all these particles are Higgs, Higgs, then we get modified the W mass, then we get a T operator.
So you are or are not integrating out W prime and Z prime?
We are integrating out.
Okay, you are. Okay.
Yeah, this is actually the only thing that we need to integrate out. I also choose, for simplicity, I just choose the heavy fermions to mix with only the top quark, but not the bottom quark, so it doesn't affect electroweak precision tests at tree level. So the only thing that we need to add to our standard model Lagrangian is only these three operators. So here is the coefficients of these operators in terms of these model parameters. Now we can actually calculate the constraints on this the particle mass, the W prime mass and the top prime mass. They are all related to a scale factor, the F here. So M top prime is larger than square root of 2 times your cover coupling for the top quark, and the factor F. So I just for simplicity, I'll take this to be square root 2 times of F. I can get constraints on these two masses. So because we, in general, this actually the correction from the standard model or from the little Higgs model is quite large. So I actually want to suppress these corrections so that it doesn't reintroduce the fine-tuning problem. We can look at these operators. We can see that if C is equal to S, this is just a mixing angles for the gauge coupling constants. And for example, here we want to, if this is equal, C is equal to S, then this is zero, this is suppressed. Here, if we take S prime to be C prime to be S prime to be equal to C prime, and also Y2 to be equal to Y1, then this is suppressed. So I'll just draw a special case. I'll assume that Y1 equal to Y2 and S prime equal to C prime, so that actually we can see that there are some regions of the parameter space. Here, the left one corresponds to the W, I'm sorry, to the top prime mass. This corresponds to the W prime mass. So this is lower bounds on these masses. So for this region, actually, we can see that these can be smaller than 2 TeV for the top prime mass. And also, the for the same region of our parameters, the C and the tangent of beta, the W prime mass is smaller than like 4 TeV. So for this kind of choices, the fine-tuning problem for this model is not very, at least not severe. So the conclusion is that for this model without the parity, still for some region there's still no fine tuning. To illustrate the relaxed symmetry case, here I consider a model with the third generation different from the first two generations. This is it's actually a very simple model. It just enlarge the standard model symmetry to include another SU2. And this SU2 is broken by some scalar fields by Douglas, a vacuum for these scalar fields to the standard model symmetry. The interesting thing for this model is that the third generation of fermions have different charge assignment under this large gauge group from the first two generations, and we actually have two different choices for the Higgs charges. They are called heavy and light case, but it doesn't matter, actually just two different choices for the Higgs charges. Then we can do the same thing actually for this model. We just integrate out this heavy gauge boson and get the coefficients for the operators. This is for two different cases. We can see that the form is very simple for the couplings, for the coefficients of these operators. Actually, in the paper, the authors...
Could you say again what the difference between the heavy and light case was?
Oh, it's just the...
The Higgs
have different...
Why call that heavy and light?
Well, just... I think this, because this is the same as a heavy quark.
Okay.
This is the same as a light quark. I mean, the two SU2s, not the hypercharge. Just a name to distinguish these two. Okay, so this is actually the authors calculate this the observables themselves. Here is in their paper. Actually, do not include all the measurements, and they need to do this calculation themselves. But if using our result, all you need is just this and this for the coefficients. Okay, so it's just a simple plot to show that there's a bound for this W prime mass at the 95% confidence level.
Well, that looks pretty high, at least in the one case.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
So I guess you would call that case fine tuned for sure. Huh?
Well, in this model, actually, it's not a solution to the fine tuning problem. So there's no mechanism to the hierarchy problem. So
and then in general,
it's just
yeah,
a model. That
okay.
We'd say it's uninteresting for the LHC.
Yeah.
You can't make these gauge bosons.
That's right. On
well,
the
yeah, five, four TV, maybe, I don't know, but yeah, it's too high, perhaps. Four TV can be made, but since the gauge boson kind of hard. If that's
the
peak.
The heavy case is definitely.
Right. If that's a peak, then maybe you can.
Well, of course, it also depends on how it couples to normal quarks and what have you.
Yeah, this is but this is for a given coupling. Of course, if you want to consider
is that coupling
a
the
mass,
same
the
as the normal W in their model.
I'm sorry.
Is the coupling for the W prime to normal quarks the same as W in their model?
It's given. it's related, I can see that.
Yeah,
but for all missing angles, it's quite high, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that C was the mixing angle, you say?
Yeah, C.
Yeah, okay. So it might be even worse in some cases.
Right.
If C were small or big, I don't know which is which.
Okay, here is some related work, actually. It's by John and company. So in for these operators, actually, there are some relations between these operators. Here is strict relations. There are some terms that not relevant. They're not relevant because they don't contribute to the measurements. So these operators both included in our analysis. This one and this one are not, but we can see that these two operators actually only contribute to the triple gauge coupling. So if actually, in my analysis, the W-pair protection is included. Actually, that is the only thing that can improve the triple W coupling. So if that is not included, then this we can set this to zero, then there's some strict relation between these operators, which means that there are two directions of the operators that are not constrained. If we include the W pair protection, then these directions are constrained, but not as well as the others, because the W pair protection has a less precisely measured than others. Here's another example of distinguish the less measured directions and more precisely measured directions. This is the so-called, we call this minimal set, actually used by Jack Moore and Guido and their collaborators. So this plot is corresponds to the eigenvalue for the matrix M. Actually, they correspond to the constraints on the different the individual operators. We can see that for these are smaller than these. So if you want to do a less precise job, and also if you use their basis, we choose 10 parameters, also model independent parameters. They are related to the operator coefficients in my analysis. They claim that these things are correspond to the most the largest several eigenvalues. So for most models, they said that you can just use these 10 parameters instead of 20. But my understanding is that since that the whole analysis is given, if you are more convenient with just getting these coefficients and put this to the program, then it's more convenient to use our result. But of course, if you are more familiar with their basis, these parameters, then you perhaps want to use this basis and the so-called minimal set. Okay, I think I'll stop here. Our analysis is just a model-independent analysis using the effective theory approach. It's very useful for constraining many TV-scale physics, TV-scale models. Thanks.
things that don't decouple, you know, like the corrections to the Yukawa couplings in Susi, you know, thinking of the Karenin et al. Analyses and other things that don't decouple at high Susi masses. I guess you have to deal with those separately.
Yeah, I think that you need to. Maybe there's not a very simple way to do it model independent.
Yeah.
You have to consider that case by case.
Yeah.
What doesn't decouple?
Well, you know, it's these the coupling to the between the bottom quark and the H2 doublet in Susi, the H up doublet in Susi at one loop doesn't decouple. You know, if you take all the masses big simultaneously, you still get a contribution.
That's because one of the couplings is a mass.
Yeah, basically.
So given the general expression for chi-squared, you can just minimize that and find the optimal values of A.
But... that one actually...
Because you have too many free parameters now, like 21. If you put all these to be arbitrary, you can change that. Actually, you can get a better fit than standard model, but you have too many parameters.
Well, I'm just wondering if you do that, is there any surprise in the correlations, or you just find that there's one that's bigger because A forward backward B is off and all the rest are small?
I have actually looked at these kind of things, but I didn't find particular interesting.
So it was just one
directions.
There was just one that was larger than all the rest, because there was one deviation.
I sort of have the same question. You know, what kind of model should be? In other words, should be?
Yeah, I think you can
explain
set all other
backwards.
all the operators coefficients to be zero, but you just have that operator that contribute to the BB bar. But you have to come up with a special model to explain that.
Yeah, we're just wondering if there's something that we're missing, that it's not just that one coupling.
I look at this, but I didn't find that very interesting directions. When we give several couplings, several coefficients of particular value, then you get a better fit or something like that. Standard model is actually a very good fit with only three parameters, but if you add like 21 parameters, you get a bad fit. But doesn't mean I didn't find that particularly interesting. Like you use two or three.
Well, you don't have to
coefficients,
you have,
and you get
don't have to do a minimization. You can just solve. It's a linear equation.
You mean solve as a minimum.
Yeah,
you can, of course. Yeah, I didn't find that a particular interesting direction that can be naturally explained by some model, and it gives a particular good.
Well, the
fit.
Question is: is there any interesting direction at all? Then we'll worry about if there's a model. You say there's no interesting directions.
Right. I think. That's correct. Yeah, at least I didn't find that. You can look at it.
Is your program public available?
It was. It was when I was at Yale, but now I'm considering if you give me some space, or the guys who are in charge of this can give me some lab space that I can put this to.
You don't have a way?
I don't know. Actually, I tried to make a direct directory in my home directory and
just send me
change the mod and try if I can see that from a browser that I failed.
For the department, the web account on this Everest machine. So you get an account on Everest, and you can have a public web page. Or you have to have your machine somehow to be able. I know they have to do
if
something.
If you have a Mac, then click on web server.
My email is in student.
Lifshitz.
There's
another one called Everest. I think you can request it.
Or you can just compress your directory and put it on particle physics.
Where?
But can you just add it at any time? Or if you have, it has to go through you. Or you can give him a
I think that Bob actually used a Daniel server.
Yeah,
he can use it to publish his
what is that?
Things.
They have to do something. That time I always ask him whether I can post a name. They suggest that type of one because then it's more vulnerable. To outside attack those hackers.
If you do what?
If my computer can host the web page, can be the web server. So they didn't put that in. So instead they give me the Everest account to host my web page. So it depends on the machine.
Your desktop or your
My desktop. So I don't know. Probably your machine is also not a web server.
Yeah. But then you'll just
probably
you know this. So you just have to get the camera map. That would be better. Any more questions? Physics questions?